This is the Saturday Night Live Friday Night Speaker Meeting held at El Paseo Shopping Center, Room 120 in San Jose, California, on May 27th, 1993. Tonight, our 10-minute speaker will be Tracy G, and the main speaker will be the fabulous Danny O. The original recording and its copy are at the SNL Tape Library. Please observe the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous and do not play this recording for commercial or entertainment purposes, and please do not break the anonymity of the speakers or any A member at the public level. Thank you very much.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Tracy. Thank you so much, Susan. As if I wasn't nervous enough, you know. Totally lost all thought I had in my head. I guess I should say when I came here 5 years ago, I didn't believe I was an alcoholic. I was 19, and I knew I had a drug problem, but no one was going to tell me not to have a beer. And I was one of those people that exercised alcoholism by drinking beer only. I did dabble a little bit in other things, but beer was my thing, and you can do this on beer, believe me. When I first came to AA, I didn't think I was like you. I listened to all of you people talk, and I thought, you know, they are definitely alcoholics. It's a good thing they're here. You know, maybe they can get some help, but this isn't for me, you know. You talked about being powerless, which was something that growing up in the home I grew up in was absolutely unacceptable. It was all about willpower. And my dad had decided that that was my problem. I just hadn't figured out how to control myself. And then you talked about God, and I was very angry with God when I got here. I didn't grow up in a religious family. I'm not Catholic or anything, you know. That's not one of my crosses to bear when I came in here, but no offense. I had made a decision when I was a teenager that I wanted to make up my own God, which was very beneficial to me when I got here, and decided to try the program, which took me 2.5 more years out there drinking to actually come back here in August of 1990 and stay. But I was very angry with God. I felt like God had taken a vacation and left me out to pasture, and I was destroying my life, and it was his fault. And, you know, I had poured my heart and soul into God for my entire teenage life, and I didn't understand what his problem was. And because I prayed all the time while I was drinking. I was one of those people that was just always screaming to God to help me. And but I would get up in the morning and do the same thing all over again. I also thought I was too young to be an alcoholic. You know, like I said, I was 19, and I had only been drinking for 2 years at that point. And I read, interestingly enough, last week I was looking through the Big Book, and I found a chapter on a young woman who got sober at, or started drinking when she was 15 and only drank for 3 years and made it to AA and is still sober as far as I know. I don't know how old she was when that was written, but that hit home with me, you know, because I thought, you know, I don't belong here. I've only been drinking for 2 years, you know. I realize I have a drug problem, but, you know, that is my problem. And I decided, someone told me in the treatment center, one of 5 treatment centers I've gone to now, that was the solution, you know. If Tracy gets out of hand, throw in hospital. And I can tell you that every hospital and treatment center from here to Texas did not get me sober. But it introduced me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I finally did decide that I had to do something drastic, and I considered coming to AA drastic, I came here, you know, and I knew where to go. Before I came here, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous was just like the punchline to a joke between me and my friends or something. You know, I didn't know what it was. I just knew it was where, like, bums went. You know, I don't know. I'm feeling... It's been a bad week. And I have a problem, and it's called pride, and I've been drowning in it for a long time now. And I don't know. I don't like the feeling of being out of control, which is why I have such a hard time with the God part and the powerless part. And because I was always very organized, and I managed to go stay in college most of my drinking career very unsuccessfully. But I did stay, and, you know, I always try to keep appearances up. And the first time I got drunk, I made a complete fool out of myself, but for the first time in my life, I didn't care, you know. I thought I was pretty. I thought I could have whoever I wanted. I thought, you know, I was the smartest person in the room, and it did things for me that I could not do for myself. And when I came here, I had done all of the things that made me different from you. You know, I went to jail. I went to mental institutions. I did go to, actually, Valley Med, mental floor or whatever. And I tried to kill myself twice. I tried to kill other people. I was a thief. I was a liar. And I was all the things that you people talked about being when I came to AA the first time and thought I wasn't like you. So I didn't have that out anymore. And when I came to Saturday Night Live, there were a lot of young people. So I didn't have that out anymore. And I honestly believe that I do not have a right to be here. This is a privilege. I feel privileged to be standing up here right now, even though I'm very nervous. And I wish I wasn't standing up here right now. But I know that I can go out so fast it scares me, you know. Because I did that for 2.5 years, you know. I got sober and I would go out with him or I would go out because of you. And I've learned that the only person that can take me out of here is me, you know. I make my own decisions, and nobody can make me drink. I've never heard anybody stand up here and talk about people pouring alcohol down their throat. You know, but that's how I felt. I thought I was persecuted. You know, it was your fault. If you just wouldn't treat me like that, I would not have to drink, you know. And I was just queen martyr when I got here. And I've had a lot of very powerful sponsors since I've been here. I've gone through a lot of sponsors. I've had 5 in almost 3 years. But I feel like I have found a sponsor that I'm okay with, you know. And I would highly recommend that to anybody in here new that hasn't gotten a sponsor. Because, you know, even if you don't think you know who the perfect sponsor for you is, just get somebody, you know. My first sponsor only had 30 days more than me. But it was 30 days more than me, you know. She had 30 days up on me. And it worked okay, you know. And I don't know, I think, you know, when I got sober, my life didn't turn into a fairy tale. You know, I won't lie to you. Because I thought it would. You know, I finally decided that alcoholism was my problem, so if I just got rid of the alcohol, everything would be wonderful, and that has hardly been the truth. You know, I was unemployable when I got here. I have a job now, you know. A lot of things have gotten better. But one of the things I think that has been the hardest thing for me is to tell you that I need you. Because I made a decision 15 years ago that I didn't need anybody. And this was way before I started drinking. And because I figured you weren't going to be there anyway. So I would just be the Lone Ranger and I would take care of it. And I still have that attitude today, you know. And that really keeps God from working in my life because I don't believe God will take care of it either sometimes. You know, but a good friend of mine told me that God will remove anything that keeps me from him. And that includes alcohol, that includes men, that includes whatever it is that's keeping my attention because I will focus on anything but what I need to be looking at. Because I'm afraid I'll find out I'm a bad person, you know. And it's not just alcoholism, I'm really crazy or something like that. And, you know, when I got here, my parents had decided I was had multiple personalities and had sent me to a psychiatrist. Because I was insane, and they didn't know what was wrong with me. And they'd sent me to all these treatment centers, and it hadn't worked. So they figured, well, maybe she's crazy. But I can say that, you know, I come in here, and there are people in this room that know just about everything about me. And I love them dearly. I don't know what I would do without them. And I didn't have people like that before, you know. This program is the greatest gift that has ever been given to me. I learned how to cry here, and now I can't stop sometimes, which is humbling for somebody with much pride as me, you know. I don't want you to know I need you, but you sure make me cry, you know what I mean? So I have people that I can call and say, help me. You know, I don't know what to do. I've done some pretty unspiritual things in sobriety, and they haven't left me. Just because I got sober didn't mean that all the behavior I learned drinking went away. I got to do it all over again in sobriety. I haven't gone to jail yet in sobriety, but I'm not stupid enough to think that isn't a possibility, you know, because I have serious violent thoughts at times, and, you know, I look at that stuff as a drink, you know, and when I'm acting that way, I need you people around to tell me, you know, because my disease doesn't want me to know. My disease wants me to keep doing it until I leave, you know, and I feel very fortunate to be standing up here at 25 years of age with almost 3 years of sobriety, with a good steady job, and I'm going to be going to UC Santa Cruz in the fall and finishing my college career, hopefully. Something that I could not do drunk. I tried. Boy, did I try. It's a great life, you know. It gets really bad in here sometimes, but it won't stay that way, you know. I have good days now. And looks like it's about time for me to stop talking. I just want to thank everybody in this room. The man you're going to hear speak tonight, first time I ever heard him talk was when I got my 30-day chip at the old live, and he's a powerful guy, and I love him very much. I hope you guys will stick around and listen to him. Thanks.
Kick-ass time. I gotta wait for all them heathens to get in from outside.
Crank it up.
I want to read something before I introduce myself. Bear with me for a minute. I was taught this before I went to my very first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. On May 22nd, 1981, and I haven't found it necessary to take a fixed pill of drink, any type of mood or mind-altering chemical from that time. And it goes something like this. It's on page 132. It says, "So we think cheerfulness and laughter make for usefulness. Outsiders are sometimes shocked when we burst into merriment over a seemingly tragic experience out of the past. Why shouldn't we laugh? We have recovered and have been given the power to help others," entitles me to say. My name is Daniel Kramer, a very grateful alcoholic. And there's people in this room tonight who are responsible for me being sober and clean since the day I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I treasure the ground they walk on. I treasured her message, and I've had a good day, you know. I've been on the sunny side of the street all day long. Haven't found it necessary to crawl before anyone since I woke up this morning. And that's new, you know. I've just had an incredible day, just to give you a few of the highlights before what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now in a general way, and I don't know how general I'm going to get tonight, you know. Fire up that AC, Holmes. I even know the connection. I ain't stupid shit. But I've had a good day. You know, some of the highlights I had was probably the greatest gift that was ever given to me was when I woke up this morning. Thank you, Victor. I asked God to please help me don't take anything today and to take care of the kid. And as a direct result of that, I haven't found it necessary to take anything. And it's a thrill. It's still a thrill. It gets a little bit more exciting each day that I embark on this journey. See, because I don't have it made. You know, I don't have it made. I'm sober. I know what it is to have a daily reprieve. I've been taught to have a daily reprieve on Alcoholics Anonymous. And against probably, as far as I'm concerned, the most insidious disease that's ever came down the pike. I wish my friend Brian was here tonight. His street nickname was Reno. Reno's not here tonight. Reno was at the Alana Club in 1981. And back then he was about 18. He had tattoos all over his body and he was looking young and tender and had already been incarcerated 9 years. He was only 18. I watched him going in and out of the penitentiary for 12 calendar years. And I wish he could go back and forth in and out of the penitentiary, or I wish he could be sitting at this Alcoholics Anonymous meeting tonight. Because I'm here to tell you that they found Brian, my friend Reno, in a motel room on the Alameda. See, he don't get a chance to hurt no more, man. See, he doesn't get a chance to go back walking through them gates no more. You know, He doesn't get a chance to walk the yard anymore. He just don't have a chance. See? And that's a hell of a price to pay in order for me to get sober and stay sober one more day in Alcoholics Anonymous. See, I don't take this gift that I have too lightly. See, I have a gift. It was given to me. You know? And I treasure it because it may never pass this way again. You know, I've had an incredible day, you know. Some of the highlights was I was able to carry on a couple-hour conversation with my wife today, and it was heavy, and it was fine. At this time last year, the hammer was down. She was in Las Gatas Community Hospital. And there was a lot of prayers being said for her. And she's here tonight. If that's the only thing that I can take to bed with me tonight is that message of prayer and meditation, I'm overpaid. You know, and then I received a lot of phone calls today, and I made a lot of phone calls. You know, and this afternoon I was a little drained, and I knew that I was going to be doing this thing tonight, and I do special things. Before I do these things, you know, and I do special things after, and because I'm involved with the medical profession, I'll just let it go at that. I got to do a few extra things, you know, and I'm very fortunate that I haven't found it necessary to take any mood or mind-altering chemicals. You know, I'm not here to affect anybody tonight. I'm not in here to point the finger at anybody tonight. I'm not in here to do anything but carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I want to tell you what the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says. It does not say complete abstinence. Nowhere in that book does it say, to my knowledge, complete abstinence. It says entire abstinence. That's what it says. Yeah. Yeah. That means I can't take nothing, I can't carry nothing, and I can't sell nothing. That's entire. You know, I can't take no half of Valiums. You know, I can't take no codeine threes. You know, when I got the sniffles, I can't take no NyQuil. That shit's got 33% alcohol in it. You know, I can't take nothing. Now, there's some people in here tonight, their cage is ready getting rattled, want to bail. You know, well, shame on you. See, and I say that from my heart, not from my neck. See, because that's what I heard. That could have been me on the Alameda last night, man. And I don't make fun of anybody who has to take prescription, whatever, from the doctor. That's none of my business. It's between you and God. That's all. If you want to keep it in God's hands, don't take it to the podium. Because sometimes the message beats you home. And I don't care what you take out of this room on me. Don't make no never mind. Sell my tape. I could care less. Yeah, I've had a good day. So this afternoon I laid down and I reached into my tape drawer and I got one of the most powerful tapes that's ever been shared in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. In the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, you understand what I'm saying? Chuck Chamberlain's memorial. Shit. You want to get moved, get that tape. I ain't giving you mine. We'll dub it for you. Listen to this tape. I had a privilege of listening to a woman who had 52 years. I mean, that's a long time in between cocktails. If you want to hear a perfect solution or a perfect kind of woman of step 6 and 7, which is being humble, you should have heard her. You know? She got sober in 1941. Christ's sake. I was 2 years old. You know, and then me and Mom's got ready, and everything was okay around the house, thank God. And I really mean that. You know, and Mom's did her thing, and I did my thing, and my hair even looks good tonight. Not only do I feel good, I look good. Yeah. Inside and out, my house is in order. Yeah, I've had my ass kicked this week. You know, my lady friend was talking about pride. My sponsor, and I'm going to get into sponsorship later, he told me all we got to do, he didn't say all I got to do, all we got to do is level it. That's all. And on some days I do better than others. And then we went around the corner here to the coffee shop, you know, to get some of that low lead. You know, let me tell you the things that make my day. Me and Mom's are sitting there. We were talking in a low tone of voice, and we were having a good time, and we were waiting for a couple of women. You know, they were supposed to meet us there at 7:30. And I knew goddamn well they weren't going to show up on time. You know, they got prior of that area. And then here come one of them, you know, my friend. And I was wondering where the other three were. And here comes the other three. Now let me tell you about the other three. Let me tell you what made my whole day. Let me tell you what makes my whole 12 years. A beautiful lady walked in with, in that coffee shop tonight, on the outside, with 90 days this coming Wednesday. 90 days. And when they tell you around here when you first come to Alcoholics Anonymous to trust God, clean house, and work with others, that's exactly what she's doing at almost 90 days. And she had two alcoholics, one underneath each arm. And she had an alcoholic that, I don't know, been sober a few minutes, 24 hours or longer. That's all I worry about. Then she had another one that had a last beer about 3.5 hours before she met me at the coffee shop. And I was talking to her, you know, because I'm interested in her. She's like me, helpless, hopeless type of alcoholic that the book talks about. And she was looking good compared to how I looked in 81. And I asked her, I says, what was your last drink? She said, well, it was a beer. And I can't point her out tonight, and I'm not going to point her out because of confidentiality and because of anonymity. Okay, and I'm going to protect that. And I asked her what her last drink was, and she said a beer. And I told her, well, what kind was it? And she told me, a Bud Light. I told her, you know what the message you just gave me? You can't even drink no more, man. Shit. A Bud Light. I told her, I don't even like light syrup. You know what I mean? You know. And I told her what Jimmy Bayard told me in 1981. I told her, do you got a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous at home? And she told me, yeah. I said, I want you to go home tonight, because inside the book, there's one page, it's the blue one. That's the only thing I own in this book. It's the only page I own. There's no writing on it, and there's no reading on it, because I don't know a goddamn thing. See? And that ain't what I told her, though. I'm going to tell her what Jimmy told me. See? He said, when you go home this afternoon, no, let me do it. Go home, and that's what I told her after midnight tonight. And I want you to write tomorrow's date in the book. And she told me, well, is it May 29th tomorrow? I said, whatever date you want to put in there, but I think it's going to be the 29th. Because I'm here to tell you that everything else can change for you and will change for you the rest of your natural born life except the date that's put in that book. See? And that's the only thing that hasn't changed for me since May 22nd, 1981. You know? That's the only thing that hasn't changed. Everything else has changed. I wish, you know, some of it wouldn't have changed. You know what I mean? Be careful what you pray for. Because they'll find a way into your house. That's it. You know, Bud Light, right on. So then I asked her, is there any drugs or alcohol in your house? Because that's what they told me when I got here. Don't have nothing in your house. And she says, no, there's not. I said, well, what kind of a house are you going home to tonight? She said, just me and the house. And I looked at my couple of lady friends and I said, no, no. And I didn't have to tell her an alcoholic alone's in bad company. I didn't have to tell her that. I didn't have to pull her covers, you understand what I'm saying? I didn't have to pull the trigger on her. I didn't even have to open my mouth to suggest anything because she's covered for tonight. She's going to have two more women with her. See? And that's what's happening here. You know, one drunk helping another drunk not to take a drink today. There's a whole goddamn message of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't want to forget that. I don't ever want to forget it. You know, tomorrow we got a day of sobriety here. You know? And you got a speaker's meeting at noon, 2, 4, and 8. Yeah, four speaker meetings. You know, and if you're hinky, you come to a speaker's meeting. And if you're real hinky and nervoso, you come to two speaker meetings. And if you're little, you come to three speaker meetings. Right? And then if you're kind of fucked up, you understand what I'm saying? Or you want to take a drink, right? You stay here all day long, man. And in between meetings, you get a chance to chew on a cheeseburger. You know, if you follow my path, tomorrow you're going to chew on a steak. And I still have... It's hard for me to do that. It's hard for me to go to a restaurant and enjoy myself, but I'm getting better. I've been dieted for 2 days for tomorrow night's dinner. They tell me to bake potatoes as large as footballs. Shit. Just give me a pound of sour cream and, you know, a cube of real margarine. Because when I go home tomorrow night, I'll tell everybody it was all dietetic food anyway. Shit. Just like when I go home tonight or in the morning, my daughter will probably say, well, how many people were here last night, Dad? Probably about 1,800, you know what I mean? It's called being honest. I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous this way. You know, I don't even look like an alcoholic. But I am one. See, I didn't come here this way. You know, and the earliest I can remember, you know, and I just did a yearly review, and my sponsor took me back to 89, and it's been a heavy 4 years. It's been a traumatic last year. You know, I mean, I've been bounced. You know, we walked the broad highway to universe. This thing ain't narrow. Shit. For Christ's sake. It's broad. It's wide. And I bounced from one end of the highway to the other. Yeah. I fell out of one alcoholic's hands into another alcoholic's hands for the last 13 months. That's where, you know what I'm saying? I've been covered every waking moment since May 22nd, 1981. Okay? But in the last year, I've been really covered. You know, people waiting at the bottom of my stairs, not afraid that I'm going to drink, okay, or I'm going to take any dope. It's that maybe I might tip over. See? I'm talking about anger. See, I'm talking about pain. I'm talking about experiencing incomprehensible demoralization on your 12th birthday. See? I'm talking about how come, why, what for, why again, why me, ain't got nothing to do with self-pity. You're not a goddamn thing. See? It's all about being human. You know, I get real excited at these speaker meetings, and I pour every ounce of energy I have into it, and then some. So when I walk out the door, just maybe the next person that sees me outside the door, or when I get home, okay, I'll be able to treat decent. You know, they got a sale on at Burger King. 3 tacos for 99 cents. You know, I may stop by and get my issue. Shit. I got $3. That's 9 tacos. You know? And if the guy forgets to put cheese in two of them, when I get home and I open them up and he don't put cheese in two of them, I don't have to call him up or go back to Taco Bell. I got prayer in that area. In sobriety. You ain't looking at no virgin. You know, the earliest I can remember is, you know, when I was around 4 or 5 years of age. Born and raised in San Francisco. The city by the Golden Gate. St. Francis of Assisi. You know, and I remember laying in front of my mother's house and my parents' house and pounding my head on the concrete. Let me set the matter straight before I go any further. And this I treasure. Okay, you can leave this room at 10 o'clock tonight, and you don't ever have to take another thing one day at a time the rest of your natural born life. And the only thing that made me an alcoholic is alcohol. And you can take that to the bank. It's got nothing to do with my mama. It's got nothing to do with my papa. It's got nothing to do with my sisters. It ain't got a goddamn thing to do with how I was raised, or what schools I went to, or the ass whippings I took, or didn't take. you know. And I'm one of the fortunate ones. I came out conquered. I didn't lose too many fights when I was out there. I was in a lot of fights, but I didn't lose too many because I didn't stick around for the end of most of them. Shit. I stole that one from Keith Drum. Two more times in his mind. You know, and I was an angry kid. I was, you know, I was angry. You know, I took a lot of ass whippings when I was, from the time I was 5 till the time I was 14. I still got scars on the lower part of my body, on my testicles, on the lower part of my legs, from where my mother carved me with a belt. You know? About 4'8". About 84 pounds, the most sadistic female that I've ever met in my entire life. Bar goddamn none. See? And she didn't use the drink. I wish she did. At least it would have altered her mind so she wouldn't have had to beat on my ass so much. But when she passed away, I was there with all the dignity and respect of a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when my mama seen me go out of that hospital room that morning, at about 6 o'clock, she knew she could go to the big meeting in the sky. That's where everybody ends up anyway. Al-Anani Nannies and A's and N.A.'s and Z.A.'s and everybody. They all end up there anyway. Even the ones that die under the influence end up there. Read the book, God's Got No Stepkids. The only thing is, if you go to heaven, you know, the big meeting in the sky under the influence, you got to pour coffee for 30 days. So, you know, I took a lot of ass whippings, man, you know. I mean, I remember the first time, you know, the first time I played in a CYO baseball game, or I forget what it was, happened to do with CYO, for all you Christians, stands for Catholic Youth Organization. And I didn't want to be a Catholic, and I wasn't a youth, and I didn't feel like belonging to no organization, okay. But see, after you play a basketball game, or after you play a baseball game, or after you're in a CYO boxing match or something like that, okay, you take a shower. And usually in a shower with the fellas, ever since you're 6 or 7 years of age, up until the time you play professional sports, they talk a lot of shit in the shower, man. Yeah, really. Yeah. Talk a lot of spiritual stuff in the shower. And I couldn't take a shower with the fellas. And I felt wrong. I felt embarrassed and I felt hurt. Because I had scars on the lower part of my body. And I didn't want to tell none of the homeboys or my partners that Mama carved me with a belt. So I was ashamed from the gate. There was no self-esteem in me when I was 8 and 9 years old. And then they decided to have a meeting of the minds. You know, in San Francisco, you're either, in my family, you're either in law enforcement, a nun, a priest, Christian brother, work for the city, a teamster, a longshoreman, or you were a punk. So they had a meeting in the mines when I was 9. You know, and I was real hurt. I was real embarrassed. You know, because they classified me as a punk when I was 9 years of age. Now, they wronged me when I was 9. I had to write about that stuff. Even though it had not been entirely my fault, I had to disregard them involved entirely. And I had to tell the truth. I wasn't a punk when I was 9 years old. I was a good kid. Okay, I was an angry kid. I was a violent kid. But I was a good kid. See? And the only thing that saved me back then was baseball. Sports. That's the only thing that saved me. Okay? And they classified me as a punk. Now, if they would have waited until I was around 14 or 15, I would have accepted it. See? But not when I was 9. You know? And then I started becoming an altar boy. And a traffic boy. You know? And, I was one of the kids from the neighborhood, man. You know, if you were in our neighborhood in the Noe Valley, the Mission District in San Francisco, if you weren't Irish and Roman and Catholic Democrat, you didn't belong in our neighborhood. See? And if you didn't drink, you didn't belong on our block. You know, because if you take all the Irish, Roman, Catholics out of Alcoholics Anonymous, you can hold a convention in a phone booth. And the reason I tell you that is everybody that I've carried the message to since I came to Alcoholics Anonymous has got a little bit of Irish in them. See? And everybody's always carried the message to me, I've got a little bit of them in me. See? It's talked about the power. See? And that's how I lived. I lived an angry kid. I was scared. But I wouldn't tell none of you guys that. You know, I used to shoot a lot of pool at Mount Presence Pool Hall at 22nd and Mission Street. I shot a fairly decent stick. You know, can't shoot when you're sober. You know, but when you're touched a little, you can shoot. You know, especially if you only got three left and you just ordered a round, and a round costs four, you'll find a way of winning. It's called getting spiritual. You know, and that's how I grew up. I grew up scared and lonely. You know, petrified. But I'm not going to tell the fellas on 22nd Mission Street in my presence, fool, hey, Holmes, I'm scared. No, yeah, right. Have another beer. So what happened was, you know, I entered high school. I went to Mission High School. They threw me out of Sacred. I went to St. Peter's. They threw me out. Went to St. Paul's. They threw me out. Went to St. James. They threw me out. They just threw me out. Didn't want to be there anyway. Hated the nuns. Didn't know until I was 5 or 6 years sober I hated authority. I love authority now. I love the discipline of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I follow my sponsor's directions right to the goddamn T. He don't have to tell me twice to do nothing. He don't have to suggest nothing twice for me to do nothing. I've done it. That's why I'm able to stand up here before you tonight and celebrate 12 calendar years. I don't disrespect my sponsor. And I'll get into that later. I'll get off the soapbox for a while, but anyway. I'm in high school, and I went to probably one of the most famous high schools in the state of California, Paul Sacred Heart High School. It was all boys high school. The only reason I went there was to play baseball. And at that particular time in 1954, 1953, there was already a lot of guys from that school in Major League Baseball, you know. And the high school coach, Dick Murray, was a scout for the Dodgers, and he wanted me to come to Sacred Heart High School. And my mother didn't want me to go. All I had to do was work. They forced me to work 7 days a week and 7 nights a week. You didn't get a day off. You know, you worked. And you didn't get to keep none of the money in my house. You had to give it all to moms. So if that happens over a period of years, you develop a little tiny bit of a thing called resentment. And it hung with me for a lot of years. So my dad's in law enforcement, right? And he knows working federal, state, and local 44 and a half years, and I got arrested. And guess what day I got arrested on? Of all days, St. Patrick's Day. Shit. You know, moms is baking Irish bread, and they got Irish this and Irish that, and they got people coming in and out of the house, and we stole this car, a 51 Chevy, and we rolled it up on Red Rock, and we got all the seat. We got everything off it. I was proud. You know. And I had my couple of sixers with me and a little juice on the side, you know, VO. I love VO. I get disappointed when people say they drank and they didn't enjoy their drink and they didn't enjoy the booze. Like, this shit, they may not be done. I enjoyed my drink and I enjoyed the hell out of it. You know, and I looked down the bottom of the hill and it was this little light on top of a squad car just spinning around, you know. Well, let me tell you something. The only thing that I couldn't do when I was an athlete was run. In spring training camp in 58 or 59, we had 318 ball players. We had the big club, we had the AAA club, we had the Pacific Coast League club, and then we had all the junior college and college kids from the neighboring communities. We had a foot race, 299 guys. I came 299th. I couldn't run. Okay? But when it came for endurance, myself and a kid named Zora Versalles, who... And about 60 games later, ended up in a big club. We always came in first. See, I always had that drive in me. Just like I have the drive in me today not to take nothing. You know, and what happened was, basically, I just wanted to play the game for a living. You know, and my parents wouldn't let me play. You know, so I stole this car, and we're up on top of this goddamn Red Rock or whatever, and the three guys that are with me, they can run. In fact, two of them were on Mission High School's track team. And all four of us got away, right? But I'm out in front. I'm leaving them behind. I'm booking. You know what I mean? And I end up at St. Paul's Church on 29th and Church just soaking wet. And I figure I got away. And I did. So I come home and I get about three blocks from my house. And I had to have a couple of cold ones called Regal Pale Beer. You guys, man, just the old timers here, remember that shit. That was good shit, bro. So I'm sitting upstairs in my house, and all of a sudden I hear a car door shut. And, you know, car doors shut in neighborhoods a lot at night. But this one particular time, I wanted to check out the car door, right? So I do the Venetian blinds, and I said, oh, shit. It was one of those 56 Chevys. Two-door hardtop. No markings on it, no nothing, and you knew who it was a Heat. So who comes walking up the stairs but a guy named Inspector Johnny Cavalli, who was my baseball coach. So I figured, I'm clean. You know. The other guy was a guy named Ed Sorelli, who ended up being Aliola's chauffeur, but my dad broke him into the PD up there years and years ago. And they wanted to know if he had a son named Danny O'Connor. Now, when I looked out the catch at the door there, okay, my father, the day he passed away, he was 6'5", 267 and a half, didn't have an ounce of body fat on him, 77 years of age. There was no weights back then. He just took care of himself. And he wouldn't let another human be. He never pulled his piece in a whole entire 44 and a half years. He knew how to keep somebody within 7 yards with his eyes. And he kind of took a look at me. You know, one of them father-son looks. He says, are you responsible for this? And I didn't say nothing. And he knew he had me. And he knew how to work the streets. And he looked down at his shoes. And when he looked down at his shoes, I looked down at his shoes too. And that's all I remember. That was a real spiritual awakening. I may even have seen Jesus that night. You know. So my father tells me, you know, now these two guys are in San Francisco PD. They've known my family for years. They're locking me up, right? So they handcuff me, and they tell me to wait down the stairs. So I'm waiting down the stairs, and I looked in the 56 Chevy, and there's two of my partners. I mean, they told the San Francisco Police Department who shot Lincoln and who was responsible for everything, and then they gave me up. You know, and I had to sit in the back seat with them two fools. You know, and back then I was skinny. I was narrow. And I was 6'5", 214. I was in shape. And I couldn't get my hands out of the handcuffs because I would have hurt them. Because I don't like snitches. I never have. You didn't run with me if you were a snitch. But the spiritual axiom in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm the biggest snitch that's ever walked in the door. I'll tell on myself in a heartbeat. Maybe three. What happened was I went to Youth Guidance Center and the judge let me out a couple of days later and I slept with both eyes open. Not one eye, both eyes. And I was scared the whole entire time I was there. You know. And when I went to take a shower, I took four guys with me and stationed them right outside the door. I didn't recognize this until I had about 3 or 4 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. When I got back home to the neighborhood, to James Lick Junior High School playground Monday, the fellas wanted to know how my weekend was in Youth Guidance Center. I tell them, shit, Holmes, it was all about nothing. I didn't want to tell them I was scared or that I was frightened or that I didn't want none of the people to take my virginity away. See? And I talk about that shit from the podium. Because if you don't clean up the sex part in Alcoholics Anonymous, you ain't going to be allowed to stay here. And you can take that to the bank. I'm clean. I've been clean for a lot of years. See, they talk about a lot of things in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, they talk about the steps, and they talk about the traditions, and they talk about working with others, and they don't talk about too much about your marriage vows. See, God ain't no pimp. And I had to learn that here. And who taught me that here is the women. Who concealed it for me was some of the women that I run around with now. Okay? Because, see, I look all the time. And I don't want to stop looking. See, because my heart's in the right place most of the time. Not all the time. Most of the time. And what happened was, a little while later, I signed a Major League Baseball contract with the old Washington Senators, and it's the only thing I've ever wanted to do is play the game for a living. And I played it and managed it and coached it and became the youngest baseball college coach in the nation up at the University of San Francisco before my 22nd birthday. And I had everything in the world that a man could ever want. Everything. I had a wife that had a lot of money, who I married. I made damn sure I married her. And when I came back from playing professional baseball, okay, and I knocked on 699 Marina Boulevard in San Francisco, right across the street from Marina Greens, right across the street from the yacht club, right across the street from the beach. I asked my daughter last Friday night, honey, 28-year-old daughter, when's the last time Daddy took you to the beach? Victor was there. He'll tell you. It was awesome. It was incredible. We're going to do it again shortly. And I asked my daughter, when's the last time Daddy took you to the beach? She says, you never have, Papa. The following morning, I asked my wife, honey, when's the last time I took you to the beach? And since we've been married or since I've been sober. She says, when I was a junior in high school. And we lived right across the street from the beach. You know, and I knocked on the door that day and, you know, walked in and I said, Jesus Christ, this is a nice pad. You know, maids. Three floors, all glass. You can look up through all three floors. You know, had a wine cellar that was huge. She owned a couple of pieces of property on that street. She owned the apartment house that Marilyn Monroe and Joe DiMaggio lived in. She was filthy rich. I made damn sure I stayed close to her. So I went away to play professional baseball again, and I had another good season because I didn't drink. So I had two great seasons back to back, and I was about ready to be called up to the big club. And they asked me to go away to play Winter League because there's a man now in the Hall of Fame that was playing third base for the old Washington Senators. And this just came out in one of my inventories about 6 months ago, and his name was Harmon Killebrew. And it was a guy playing first base named Jose Mincher that couldn't carry my jock on a good day. See? And I knew that. I knew that. It took me 9 years in sobriety to admit that I was a great athlete when I was out there. I wasn't a good athlete. I was a great athlete. See, because the fourth step says fearless and moral and thorough inventories. I was afraid to tell you because what you would think of me. Called self-esteem. And what happened was, the reason he got moved to first base is because I didn't go to spring training. I got married. You know, and I took my wife and later 7 children into the sewer. Right before my 23rd birthday, I knew I had a serious drinking problem. I didn't want to quit. And about 6 months later, I knew that it was going to cost me my life, but I couldn't quit. I wanted to quit in the world's worst way. At that time, we were the proud parents of 2 children, and my wife was pregnant with the girl that's in here tonight that carries my last name. And she's just my daughter. She ain't nothing else. She's just my daughter. Okay, to you, she may be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. But to me, she's just my daughter, and it has to stay that way. And where I learned that was yesterday. I had to admit that yesterday. See, because I can't put no expectations on her. Okay? All I can do is be a living example. Okay? That yes, she can come to my house and talk about anything she wants. And that shit will stay in the living room. See? And what happened was, because of alcohol, I took my wife and later 7 children. It should have been 8. But see, this is the first time I'll ever admit to you that my wife was 6 or 7 months pregnant. With our very first one, she lost it. And it was because of my drinking that she lost it. See, I wasn't a kind alcoholic when I was out there. See, I wasn't a good dude when I was out there. I was a goddamn chicken shit wannabe punk. That's what alcohol allowed me to become, was an asshole. See, it was real easy for me to get into the steps because it was all over. I haven't put my hands on another human being since the day that I became Alcoholics Anonymous. Not a human being. See? I've made amends in one way, shape, or form to every one of my children of every waking moment since the day that I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay? And what happened was, on May 20th, 1981, my wife told me, you got to get out. You're killing me. You're killing the kids. I love you. You got to go. And I was just a vegetable back then. I didn't know what anger or resentment or gratitude or lust. I didn't have nothing. 518 pounds of my pants was held up by a rope. And I tried to take my son's life with a bar stool. And I wish I could stand here tonight and tell you that it was because I was in a blackout. It's a lie. I remember all of it. I used to say I remember part of it. But I can't say that no more. See, because I've talked to my son about it. See, and we cry together now. Because last Saturday night, me and him were on the same ticket. He's got 10.5 years as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and his papa's celebrating 12. And we've been able to do that speaker's gig for 10 calendar years. And we went to hear him speak down in Modesto one day on his second birthday, and he says his best friend's his papa. See, that's the same kid I used to steal from. See, all my children, for years, I used to steal their money. To this waking moment, I'm not proud of it. I used to steal money from my wife. I sold 7 second mortgages to a place called Murphy Real Estate in Sunnyvale, California. And not one time did my wife ever refuse to give me the second mortgage that belonged to her. Okay? She was scared. She automatically gave it to me. She would do anything for me not to be violent. And that ain't how I was raised. That ain't how it was the first 4 or 5 years that I was sober. I was just a good old man. I was a good old man who was a drunk. You know, I know what it is to work. You know, I know what it is to have a couple of jobs and bring home the Gitas. You know, I know what it is to attend bar at night because I wanted to feed my kids. You know, and I know what it is to go 5 years held up in a custom-built home that I had built in Sunnyvale on a cul-de-sac. And I couldn't take a shower. And I had shit in my pants and pee-pee down my legs. And my hair was long. And I was weighing 518 pounds. And my kids would beg me to give me a shower. And the best thing sometimes I could do is one of the kids turning a hose on me. And I still went another 7 years after that. So see, I'm very grateful the way I got here. On May 22nd, 1981... the guy that owns the 7-Eleven, Barry S. and June Song, made a phone call to the Alcoholics Anonymous hotline. I love central office. I love world service office. And I love people who work under the diverter. I treasure them in every fiber of my body. See, because that's who carried the message to me, was a woman named Jane. And Jane had been sober, you know, I didn't find out till later that she'd been sober since the Last Supper. But she didn't tell me how long she was sober. She just asked me if I wanted to quit drinking. You know? You're looking at a guy tonight. I didn't come here to Alcoholics Anonymous to make you guys laugh or to have a good time. You know? I'll tell you why I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I came here to learn how to get sober and learn how to stay sober. You know? And buy the ticket. Okay? And the ticket can be whatever you want. And I showed up at the corner of Fair Avenue and McLaughlin. At about 8 minutes after 11 on May 22nd, 1981, and the longest walk that I've ever had in my entire life was from the end of the bus stop to the bottom of the stairs at the Atlanta Club of San Jose. And I haven't found the necessary to make that walk since that moment. And I used to say I crawled up the stairs or I walked up the stairs or I did this. I don't remember. Okay? But I remember some dinging going on. And I happened to get inside the door. And there were some guys shooting a pinball machine. I didn't know nothing about pinballs except living by them for about 10 years when I was a kid. And I looked at some guy shooting a stick, you know. I mean, to go to show how good I was and, you know, how much of a bad dude I was, I couldn't get off 13th and Heading for 9.5 years. I couldn't get off Heading Street. I don't mean all of Heading Street. I'm talking about from the 801 to Gino's Pizzeria to the University of Rock Hall. What a toilet that shit pot was, boy. And right across the street to a place called a cave. And I used to pride myself about going into the cave. I'm one of the very few honkies that's ever went into the cave. Okay? And I used to take great pride in that. Oh, I'm tough. You know? Well, let me tell you the real reason they took me into the cave. Okay? There's a set of railroad tracks goes around the end of that building. And I used to have a habit of sleeping on the railroad tracks. And it's not a good idea when they're switching boxcars. So two of my fellow Chicano brothers would come out and they'd pick me up. Maybe sometimes it would take me 4 or 5 and they'd take me into the rock house. I mean, into the cave. And they'd take me way in a back booth. The best booth of any saloon that's ever existed. And they sit me down, they put a bottle in front of me. And I didn't find out until 2 or 3 years later, sometimes a bottle had water in it. You know, if they wanted me to puke, they put seven up in it. You know, or they put an empty bottle there, man. See, I couldn't even drink. That's why I told that woman at the coffee shop tonight that she can't drink no more. She don't even know it. Drinking Bud Light. Are you crazy? Christ's sake. Shit. I mean, come on, give me a break. You know? But I meant it from my heart. See? I meant it from my heart, not from my neck. Because I know what it is to come through the door of Alcoholics Anonymous like I did on May 22nd, 1981. Okay? And I know what it is to ask the greatest question that I've ever asked since I came here. I was leaving because there was a guy sitting at the bar. See? And I don't want to drink no more, man. I was hurting. See? I was scared. Okay? And I didn't have no place to live. Okay? It was all over. See? And I started leaving. A man reached out and he touched me just like this. And he said to me, "Can I help you?" Just like that gal did at the coffee shop tonight, man. And I said, "Yes, is this a place where you learn how to stop drinking?" And he said, "Yes, it is." And he took me into the dining room. And he introduced me to six people. Seven. Five of them passed away clean and sober. I mean, two of them passed away clean and sober. And the other five are still alive. God knew what he was doing. God knew what he was doing. I have a spiritual advisor. She's a woman. Jimmy used to have a pickup truck almost 22 years ago. And he used to go around the recovery houses and just tell them, "Get in the truck." And he told this old gutter-hyped heroin addict, junkie, Wynette, to get in the truck. She just celebrated 21 years. She spent 28 years in state prison. She spent 26 years in a row without getting out. She spent, you know, they talk a lot about the O'Connors around the Alano Club and about how much Danny gives and gives. It's all bunk. Just what that woman gave me, or what Glenn Goble gave me, or what a couple other people gave me in my first three, four calendar years, if I stay sober till I'm 100, I'll never be able to give it away. I'm talking about 6 to 7 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days in a row for three calendar years. And even when I was working, I didn't know how to work 8 or 9 hours a day and then go home and get 6 or 7 hours rest. No, I worked 8, 9, 10 hours a day, okay, and then I'd go home and sleep for an hour and a half, 2 hours, and then I'd go to two meetings, and I'd spend 4 or 5 hours with my lady friend, and then I'd go to work. You know, that's what I had to do. I remember my first speaker's meeting. I'll never forget my first speaker's meeting, ever. Okay? And this man touched me. Okay? And the famous saying in Alcoholics Anonymous is keep coming back. Keep coming back. And my friend was speaking that night, and I sat on two chairs. I tried to up one, you know what I'm saying? Shit. I sat on two chairs for over 3 years in this program. Nobody made fun of me. Nobody called me fatso. Okay? Nobody made fun of me when Big Daddy Vince used to give me a shower and walking me around naked in the Alano Club with all the windows open, okay, and let the air hit my body because you couldn't put a towel on my body. See? Nobody made fun of me when I used to sit down and I'd be smelling good, and 3 minutes later I'd be stinking because I couldn't control my bowel movements. See, I'm spoiled. I asked Victor to turn on the AC tonight. There was no AC when I got sober. You know, I'm spoiled. Look at this room, man. See, look at this, look at the artwork we got here. See? Look at the carpet, look at the chairs, look at the people, man. See, I'm spoiled. See? I forget about the heartache, disappointment, tragedy of a week ago. See? Don't, because I got 12 years, I don't have nothing. Because I've received 12 years, and I'm sitting in my chair here, or in the pavilion, in the back, because I'm going through changes. Don't walk by me. And knowing that I got it together because I've got 12 years, that's a felony. That's the most serious felony you could commit in Alcoholics Anonymous. See? Yeah. I give my friend a hug and a kiss at the beach last Friday night at 10 minutes to 12. A guy that's been sober a long, 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 long time, longer than anybody in this room used to be. And when he gave me a hug and a peck on the cheek, he kind of shrugged his shoulders. I told him, Holmes, don't shrug your shoulders on me, man. It ain't necessary. Because he drank that day. Smell of alcohol in his breath. Yeah. I'm in a speaker's meeting just like my friend up here is. And a famous saying, keep coming back, it works. My friend said it works for everybody in this room except this big dude right up here. And he pointed to me. He said, you don't get to keep coming back, it works. He said, you just stay here. Boom. Yeah. Let me tell you something. I wouldn't have made it. And I say this from my heart. Okay? If I would have had to come to this room. And I'll tell you why. See, this place is my home group now. See? But I had to stay in here the other night. Because, see, I was hurting. 12+ years. And there was a couple people had to go home. They didn't close the doors. They didn't ask me to leave. We got to go home, you know. But sometimes this room does close, you know. And I'm not the best guy in the world to go to coffee shops. I'm learning. You know? And they let the room stay open. And a woman came up and asked me, I'm back here in a corner pouring my guts out to another alcoholic that should have been sitting next to me tonight. You know? And I hope he didn't drink. I sponsor him. I don't take credit for him being sober or any guilt for him not for whatever. And he ain't doing good. And he just picked up a medallion today. I hope I give him the opportunity of giving it to him tomorrow night. Because tomorrow night's when I get mine. Really, it's when we get ours. You know, what happened was I embarked on this journey. Okay, I really don't get into the steps too much. I do on a daily basis. I take the people I sponsor through the steps. I have a meeting every Saturday with a human being that's sitting in this room tonight. She's fine, man. And we go to our little spot. We spend 3 or 4 hours together. And it's all about the book, the power, and the people. It's always been comprised of the book, the power, and the people. And I haven't found it necessary over 12 years to tarnish that gift. Of the book, the power, and the people. Nothing else. See, it all happens in threes. Unity, service, and recovery. The book, the power, and the people. You, me, and God. You, me, and God. God, you, and me. It's all threesome. You know? You can't beat that with a stick on a wet day. You know? So when I leave here tonight, I leave you people. But I still got the book and I still got the power. See? And when I go home, okay, I don't know what's going to happen when I walk out this door. And I don't know what's going to happen when I go home. It's really not important at this moment. But I tell you what, the power is always with me. And I have a telephone that works because the bill's paid. And my children love me. And next week, I hope Saturday or Sunday next week or whatever, I'm going to bring my granddaughter here. You know, she's fine, man. Wait till you meet her. You know, she'll walk in here next weekend with God's help, with all her pride and dignity in the world, with her grandpa and her grandma. Because she's never seen her grandpa drink. And she'll probably be wearing tight Levi's and, I don't know, maybe a little cut-off Pendleton. Whatever, she's got a nice wardrobe. You know, her Reebok tennies. She lives in L.A. She may have her pants pulled up high until she gets to San Jose. You know what I mean? She's been to more meetings than some of the guys I sponsor. She'll be 8 years old in October. When? Hey, I didn't ask you to be on the tape. You understand what I'm saying? And I could, we could joke like that. You know, I'm grateful that that God's in our house and Alcoholics Anonymous in our house and the other program. Called Our Lady of Perpetual Guilt. And we joke. We joke around. We laugh. I'm gonna claim the fame, man. I mean, shit, what can I say? I took her off the street. I'm responsible for her being here tonight. If you want to get down to the real truth of the matter, okay, because when we go home in the car, I'm not packing a piece. See, she hasn't had my hands laid on her in 12 years. See, she respects me. She's got more men friends and women friends in this room. She loves coming to Saturday Night Live. See, I can leave and trust and leave her with whoever. Her back's always been covered since she came here. It never was covered the first 22 years of marriage. You know, I'm overpaid. You know, overpaid. And I don't know what's going to happen after I leave here. Okay, but I'll tell you one thing. I'm covered. Because as long as I can talk to another drunk, yeah, wet or dry, I prefer dry or sober, okay? But I got to tell you the truth. See, nobody hung up on me when I got here. Nobody hung up on my son Kevin when he got here. Nobody hung up on Stevie the 13,000th time he came through the door, okay? Yeah, he was in and out of here more than all you newcomers put together. Shit. Passed away with 93 days clean and sober. That's a hell of a price to pay. I have 14 days of perfect peace with that young man. You know, sometimes I wish he was still drinking. Maybe he'd still be here. I don't know. Don't come up to me and ask me about the book on grieving, because I don't have it. You know, my wife told me tonight, and I didn't know this, she had a chance of meeting Mrs. Chamberlain at Palm Springs. And I didn't notice until tonight, because Mom's was crying. And my wife went to the Palm Springs convention with a woman named Michelle. And she ran into some Al-Anons, and one happened to be Mrs. Chamberlain. I believe her first name is Elsie. Isn't that right? Elsie. That's close. And the reason my wife went down there was because her sister was dying of alcohol. Okay? And she already been in and out of them recovery houses, whatever. And she's been to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I just want to remind that new one that's in here tonight, or my daughter, okay, or the person that's in here, think that you can beat this thing. You can't beat it. Join us. Let us walk with you, man. Let us help you with this thing. Okay? Because what happened was, 4 days later, my son Kevin, my wife, myself, and Steve Boydat had a drive to San Bernardino. Okay? And I stayed at the house. And they went down to the other house, okay, because they found her dead. Okay? And let me tell you what happened. This is sad. Okay? This is still hard for me to talk about, man, to this moment. She was laying on the floor with her head tilted like this, okay, with a big bowl of that snow in front of her. Right? And a whole fishbowl full of Bombay gin. Okay? And her elbow. Now listen to this. Take this home with you. See, her elbow was laying on a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And she didn't even know she was into on the journey. Her hand was laying on a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't leave before the miracle happens. I beg of you to stay here. And it leads me up to, you know, my sponsor wrote me a note 11 years ago. Tell them a little about what it was like, a little of what happened and what it's like now. And we've done a pretty good job. It all leads up to this. It's on page 312. And it goes something like this. The last 15 years of my life have been rich and meaningful. I've had my share of problems, heartaches, and disappointments because that is life. But also I've known a great deal of joy and a peace that is a handmaid of inner freedom. I have a wealth of friends, and with my AA friends, an unusual quality of fellowship. For to these people I'm truly related, First through mutual pain and despair, and later through mutual objectives and a newfound faith and hope. And as the years go by, working together, sharing our experiences with one another, and also sharing mutual trust, understanding, and love. Without strings, without obligations, we acquire relationships that are unique and priceless. There is no more loneliness with that awful ache so deep in the heart of every alcoholic that nothing before could ever reach it. That ache is gone and never needs to return again. Now there is a sense of belonging, of being wanted and needed and loved. In return for a bottle and a hangover, we have been given the keys to the kingdom. I want to beg you, don't ever walk in front of me. And I want to beg you, don't ever walk behind me. But what I want to beg you for is keep holding my hand and help me to celebrate one more moment. Thank you very much, and God bless you.